you're working in a field called hacktivism. First of all, I was thinking, because I never I didn't realize from the writings about the exhibition. So what is your actual background as an artist?
Well, my background is really quite complex, because I got a degree in theater and cinema, the University of Turin, and I actually have also some projects that are more with videos as well, so they are professional actors, but still it could be considered activism, because these videos go through YouTube, and then there are public action that are connected to the online environment, so it's quite experimental. But yeah, I also do something about cinema and theater somehow. And I don't know how I started. I always thought that computers are powerful tools, and the world is going to use them for everything, and power information is really pivotal. So I decided to stay in this field somehow. And I started when I was really young to do stuff before of internet somehow, like in the 90s. So it was like 16, and they also had kind of pirate radio, so I was really interested in information somehow, in broadcasting information. And then came internet, and so I started to study the internet protocol and doing website, and then become also a job and so on. And well, when I really started to have kind of international feedback with this kind of work was in 2001-2002, when I had this website against the NATO, against the military organization, and it was a form of blog, and was connected somehow to indie media. It was really in the beginning, so the audience at that time was really few, was not like now that everyone has a blog. And through this website I could collect news about the new war, so the end of 2001 means after 9/11. So the Afghanistan war, and then the Iraq war, and especially the expansion of NATO in the, here in the East, mm-hmm. Europe, when Albania joined NATO and the other country. And so it was years of struggles. So I collected, it was basically an aggregation process that I did manually, but through this aggregation I could collect a lot of news and create sense of that. So it became a really popular website, for every manifestation against the NATO in Europe, I always tried to review and have feature about that. So the activism as well start to create the network with my website. And then I started to create this virtual manifestation that were kind of attack to the NATO website, means that you call people to connect at the same time to the server of NATO until it collapses. Mm-hmm. And it was already quite, it was not a new type of attack, it was already something was going on, but I focused against NATO, against war, and I focused of course also on new technology that was able to do this attack and perform better. So one day, for example, was a manifestation in Germany or in Prague, I don't remember, even in 2003, yeah. And in that case, I coded a script with Flash, Flash 4, the beginning of Flash, and this script was able to load a lot of the website, so it could really collapse the website of NATO. And then I had a press release through all the network around the world, and so I ended up to be investigated by the military department, the defense department of the state and the US, and I had all the review in Japan and so on. So that was the first thing that became international and was pretty important, how the software could manage this kind of attack and putting the organization such of NATO in an embarrassing situation, or even forced to close down their information somehow.
So how come that you ended up in the art context with with this action?
I was always interested in the art since the beginning. So the beginning for many Italian artists, even Janez, that is originally from Italy, we are somehow all children of Luther Blissett. Luther Blissett was kind of art movement. The leaders were in Bologna, but then spread out. Was really kind of big collective. And Luther Blissett was the first that did action on internet and especially with media, also mass media. And so when I was 16 year old, I was already reading the Luther Blissett books, so I was already engaged. But then, with the war, especially with the NATO, was not an artistic project, it was pretty political. And because I thought, okay, that is important, war is not about art, it's something that should be something direct, politics. And so I just left the art for a while, for a couple of years, for doing this project. And then I went back. With street art, so I did also street art, and street art is a form of media art, I consider, because it's kind of not only sharing artworks, but it's also kind of propaganda through media, and actually posters or eventually graffiti are media as well in the public space, and you can create them digitally. Most of them are created digitally, so I was interested in that for a couple of years, and I also organized kind of exhibition, public exhibition, by inviting artists and occupying the street and create artworks. And then I was in a collective, Italian collective of net art called Epidemic, that now died, but was a pretty big collective, and we did a few projects. One was called Anti-Mafia, but not because of the war Italian. Anti-Mafia was a software, actually a peer-to-peer software, really interesting project. Unfortunately, it was a big collective, so we didn't manage to promote it well, but it was a really interesting project. And this Anti-Mafia software was able to do the same that I did with the NATO, so asking people to connect all together in a dating, sorry, in a website until the website collapsed. But was peer-to-peer, so anyone could promote an action, I mean a net strike action or any kind of action in a peer-to-peer, so it was kind of sharing synchronized action. And was a software that anyone could download and organize action, political action. And that was the Epidemic work. And then with that, we had also the exhibition presentation, was the 2002 2003. And then I met Alessandro Ludovico, that is this Italian guy that is the editor-in-chief of Neural.it, is a popular magazine of new media art. And with him we work on Google Will Eat Itself, and also with Huber Morgan, because he knew Huber Morgan. So we developed Google Will Eat Itself, that was about Google, and it was about to fraud Google to get money from Google through the AdSense program, and then invest this money in a share of Google and try to transform Google in a public company really quickly. And it became really famous project as well. Google sent us a cease and desist letter. We did a lot of exhibition, presentation, interview. And that was the first really against a big company that I did. Mm-hmm. And then after that we did Amazon Noir, always three together, Ubermorgan.com, Alessandro Ludovico and me, and was about stealing books, digital books from Amazon.com. In that case I knew about this bug of Amazon that was possible to search words inside the books, and through queries, to loops of query, phrase by phrase, download all the books. So I just coded a software that could download all the books, all the digital mm-hmm. books, and then we distributed these books through our website and peer-to-peer network.
So is this, sorry to interrupt, yeah. So the third part was attacking the eBay, as much as I know.
No, then the story,
part of the trilogy.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure which is the third project, or is it a Facebook, or is it
that
eBay?
That is the controversy. It happened that after these two projects, Google will itself, Amazon Noir, we split with Ubermorgan, because mm-hmm. we had many issues, I can tell you, but really long story, heavy story, tough story. And so he did this trilogy by himself, that is about eBay. Mm-hmm. And we in the beginning thought to do that together, all together, but then we split. And so he did this project, and we worked on the other one of Face to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so now we have two trilogy basically. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of also provocation, of course, because fuck off, trilogy is not really about trilogy. But basically, the point of Ubermorgan was that he didn't want to work on political stuff, or the way he's really focusing on his career, basically. So he wants to work by himself and eventually use the other project as theology. And instead we tried to research on the basic concept of the other two projects that were about monopoly information and hacking. That hacking, of course, was needed. And so we ended up to work on Facebook when I found out that it was really easy to download pictures, and we worked a lot until we did this project.
Mm-hmm. So where do you draw a line? You mentioned that both the art context and the activism. So where do you draw the line between art and activism, actually?
Oh, that's really difficult. No, it's not difficult. Well, if you think at culture in general, it's political. I mean, you can't think culture as a neutral field. I mean, of course, when you do culture, you do political stuff. And I mean, arts in general, I always thought art with a social function, really focusing on a social function. And with this project, I always try to push these boundaries to do direct action. It's still really a depiction, it's still a kind of representation, of course. You don't change the world with these actions. But it's a representation, as representation is art, because we represent the reality, and when you represent the reality, you do art. So I can ask you, is it art political or is not, you know? Mm-hmm. And is it politics art or not? It's really something that I see really mixing together when you do something.
Yeah, it's a little bit probably controversial. You mentioned before that museum in Bristol commissioned you, but then they cancelled. But probably you had some, you did some commissions already before for the museums. But museums, if we talk about the museums, we talk about the same structures of power, probably, as with the capital. What's your opinion on that?
Oh, well, you use the infrastructure that you have to browse and to create something of new. The point is that, you know, you can boycott everything that is basically impossible nowadays. I mean, everyone needs a bankomat, a bank card. Everyone, basically. So you can't really boycott anymore these structures. So you can browse it to create something of new. I mean, you can use them to do something new. And in all these projects, most of the projects that I did, it's not about sabotage somehow. So it's direct action, is true, but it's not really a direct political direct action to sabotage. It's actually something that creates new models. So it's kind of visionary in a way, but also practical, pragmatical. So it's actually creating new model based on present infrastructure. So, like, for example, in Google, we didn't say you shouldn't use Google, but we should transform Google in a public company. With the credit cards, I don't say that credit cards are bad. I mean, they are bad, of course, but you can use the infrastructure that is there, these unique code numbers, and the fact that credit card machine readers, scanner are everywhere, in a better way. So I am not saying we should destroy all the card reader, but I am saying, okay, there are the card readers, it's amazing, who did this card reader? It's actually people that invent the card reader, and the company took over and monopolized the card reader. That it was just a technology. Technology is neutral, and then come a power structure and take over of the technology. And the same with Facebook. It's like 20 years that people in internet say that the networks are a great thing, that people should share stuff on the networks, and then come Facebook, and then Facebook try to monopolize all these things. And so it's not bad the network itself, it's not bad the fact that people share the stuff. The bad is that there is one company that monopolizes all this sharing. Mm-hmm. That is really bad.
So with the project Face to Facebook, you somehow stole about 1 million accounts and publish it on your own website. Yeah. So what kind of consequences did you have for doing that, actually?
In the case of Facebook, they have really an aggressive marketing strategy. We'd call it marketing strategy because it's also about PR, public relation. And the consequences were many legal threats by Facebook, which first of all, we are banned from Facebook and whatever. So we can't use Facebook anymore, and they ask to delete all the data, this public data that we have, and they don't want that we explain this project and how we did this project, we promote this project, and we have a distribution with this data that we stole. And they don't want that we use the word Facebook in the title, in the domain name, in the project. And
so it's about kind of copyrights also.
Yeah, it's about copyright, but it's really controversial because they pretend to own this data, but they can't really own this data because this data belongs to the user. So it's even more controversial than, let's say, Amazon, in which I stole books. But these books were under the copyright of the publisher, first of Amazon, publisher and the author. So the copyright was an entity that you could link to these three entities, and they could manage better. I mean, it took years to manage these copyrights, of books that now are online. I think now that they found out a good way, because Google Books, they use a lot of books online. But they had a lot of debate, I remember at the time. And with Facebook, it's really new and it's really more difficult, because who owns this data? I mean, is the user that agree on the fact that is giving the content to Facebook?
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you that, if you know about, for instance, this internet law. So it means that if you click on the I agree on internet, is the same of as signing a paper, a real contract. What is the internet law says about that?
Well, the internet law, theoretically, everything that you do online, even an email, just an email, is like a signed paper. So when you send an email, the lawyer can also read the email and say, okay, you send this email, so this email is a proof in a trial. And so even without doing this check, I mean, you already, when you visited Facebook, you somehow, you are really tracked already. And even the history of Facebook, when a history of the web, when there is a page on the web, is tracked, is archived somewhere. So lawyer can also check a page 2 years ago, of 2 years old, and they can use as proof. The point of Facebook is that their term and service, the contract, when you say agree, is like 40 pages of contract. It's really the most complex contracts in the world. So even lawyers, even good lawyers, have troubles to read all these contracts. You can imagine, like a single person, normal person, they can't really read. And that is also illegal somehow, because the contract should be easy, understandable. I mean, it's about protection of consumer. The contract must be easily understandable from the consumer. So you never know what you agree on. And even if you agree on, you agree actually on a private agreement, so between you and Facebook, then there is the privacy regulation of the state, so the constitution, freedom of expression, right of the single person, individuality. And so in a trial, then there is the judge that say, okay, you had a private agreement, but look at the constitution. This person has the right to have his own data, and this is a private company, and they may make money on that, but they still are a company. So it's really a complex situation in which, of course, the biggest company has like 100, 200 lawyers, probably even more in the case of Facebook, mm-hmm. and they push one way. They push because they are lawyers. That is their job. So they push the right of Facebook, and then you have the user that they lost all the rights because they don't have lawyers. So Facebook is pretending to do whatever they want, but then when there is a proper judge that do the trial, the user probably has the right, because of course it's about the right of common people, you know, it's really about common sense. But still the companies always try to push their point. And in this case is pretty easy, because it's about really personal data, so it's pretty easy for the consumer to win a judgment. But in some cases, especially in the commercial world, when it become a commercial commodity between companies or a commercial goods, it became really tricky, because this company, especially the powerful company as Facebook, they have the money to make everything on, to patent every kind of shit. So when they patent the fact that you have a name and a surname, mm-hmm. everyone that want to use a name and a surname have to pay Facebook, if I am another company. But as you single, you can still use name and surname, I hope. I mean, you may win the trial. But as another company that they want to use name and surname to call you, I can't, because Facebook patent this idea somehow, no? So that is how it works. And for example, also Amazon, we also selected Amazon, for example, because Amazon patented a lot of things. They patented the fact that you can buy through a cart, you know, the cart online, e-commerce cart. They patented that. And in case of Facebook, they patented the word face and book. And Facebook, of course. So everyone that wants to use Facebook, that is a word that you find in a dictionary, have to pay or deal with Facebook, because they patented the word Facebook.
Is this patent legal in all the world or just in USA?
Depends how much money you have. It's really about much money you have. You can patent in your own country, or you can patent internationally. And depends. I mean, the patents is another huge debate. I mean, it's connected to the World Bank as well. So it's such of a direct relationship without the IPO is another organization that or manage these patents internationally. But we can also talk about. You know, I am going far, but we can also talk about the HDV medication, you know, that was a big discussion, because this big company had enough money to patent their medication, like pills that save lives. So we had, now I think it's quite ended this story, but until 2004-2005, the people in Africa or in India, they couldn't have medication for HDV, because it was patented by a company here, Roche, for example. And so they started to pirate. Also in Brazil, they start to pirate the medication, because this big company could patent the medication all over the world. And this happened also in the information world, where one big company can patent how the information is structured, or even personal data as name or surname of someone.
So what is the goal actually then of your most of your project and the project face to Facebook? Is this like awaring people about the consequences? And with the Facebook, I think it's also the idea of leaving Facebook, because anybody is able to leave Facebook, you know, you can sign out, you can delete your account. So is this the main goal, main idea of this project, face to Facebook?
Well, the main based idea is really about power information and how everyone can use this information as material and create other structures that have similar power to influence people or corporation or organization or whatever, the society in general. That is the abstract reason of this project for me as an artist. Then, of course, in face to Facebook was kind of direct action against Facebook. But we are not saying to boycott Facebook. We are trying to rising awareness about the dangers of Facebook, the fact that Facebook collect all this data and concentrate all this data and pretend to own this data, and you can't manage your data as you want. You can't even delete your data on Facebook. There is still no way to be sure that they deleted all the data that you posted, for example. And so, yeah, it was about rising awareness of the user, and sorry for the user if we had to provoke so strongly, but actually it worked out, and probably it was needed to provoke so much. And also putting Facebook in an embarrassing situation, because now Facebook has to say to the world, this data is owned by Facebook or not, because if it's owned from Facebook, we have to delete all this public data. If it's not owned by Facebook, we can use this data. So they have to say that, because so far they didn't. They pretend to own this data. But if you think I could do the same project, the same thing, exactly the same thing with the telephone directory, you know, the telephone directory page by page, mm-hmm. where there are all the names on the people of Ljubljana, mm-hmm. so I could like just do a software that recognize the name of girl and the name of woman, and then say all the Julia are beach. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think that all the Julia are beach. Okay, and what happened that I could create a dating website with name, surname and the telephone number that you can call the girl, are you beach? You know, what is public data in a way? So yeah. It's not different. Who could sue me? The telephone company? Mm-hmm. That is the point.
But if you go one step further, what would be your optimal idea of social network, for instance?
The optimal idea is definitely a decentralization of this data, so that you can actually you have your phone, for example, and on your phone you hold all your personal data, and so you decide when your phone is on and when you want to share the data on your phone, and what you want to share, and eventually switch off and eventually delete, and so that you manage personally all your stuff. And that is called peer-to-peer. And the entire internet is thought actually to be peer-to-peer, because made by nodes. And what happened that it's really kind of economy rules. So when there is a lot of demands, like to share, to have connection links, social relation on internet, there is a big company that want to monopolize this demand and make more money than the other. So that is Facebook actually. And so we don't use peer-to-peer technology, not because it's not efficient, because it's actually really efficient. It's the native technology of internet, is the perfect technology. We don't use peer-to-peer because there are these big companies that want to concentrate all this power of this data in few hands. That is the point. So, and we are actually missing this peer-to-peer technology, this peer-to-peer infrastructure, node-to-node, and the fact that you can manage everything because of lobby, I would say, even political lobby. Why not? It's the same. Sometimes I say that it's the same with petrol, with oil. So we didn't use car. That electrical car, we don't even have fabric, cotton fabric, mm-hmm. we use everything oil, we use a lot of plastic, because the oil lobby pushed the government to use oil to do everything kind of shit. And somehow, it's not a far metaphor. Somehow in the internet is the same. We are using centralized server like Facebook, like Google, like Amazon and blah blah blah, because these firms, these companies are so powerful that they create law to hold this power, and somehow the government earn as well. Sometimes they say that actually Facebook is it's a war machine. Why is a war machine? Because of course power information is the most important gun in a war, you know. It's not really the aeroplane and the bombs, mm-hmm. but it's knowing what happened on the ground. And since everyone use from Libya, Egyptian and all these kind of revolution that we saw in North Africa, there in California, in a single machine, they they have all this data. I mean not between us, because we are nothing. I mean, I am just an artist. I am not a freedom fighter, you know. But they can check what 100 freedom fighters are talking about. In fact, that is really important. I mean, in a war context, that
with the projects face to Facebook, you created this website, but you shut it down after 1 week,
days,
10 days, to avoid the consequences.
Yeah.
There was a question from the audience: why did you do that? So can you explain once again?
Yeah. The main point. Well, first, of course, Facebook asked to shut down, but it was not really about Facebook. The point was the number of reaction that we had, the feedback from the single person. Mm-hmm. And most of them, they just say, okay, I am Paolo, and if I am inside the dating website, I am going to sue you. And so we had to look for this person to be sure that they were not inside. Someone found actually themselves, like 5-7 person, they actually found their person inside the movie site, and that was really kind of lottery, I would say, because you can compare 250,000 people to 500 million persons. So I mean, you could be really lucky to find yourself, but he found himself. It was really interesting as experiment, I would say. And then we had Death Street, many insult, like people insulting us, stressing us. Was really, really intense pressure every day, because every day someone wrote us, like menacing us of lawsuit, death threat, and insult, bastard. So, you know, they mm-hmm. really pushed down us. And some organization as well, they say that we couldn't do that, and they were going to sue us, like this Danish organization. And the other side is also true, that someone actually asked to be published on the dating website. So, like, sorry, I am single, I am looking for a pretty girl. Can I publish my picture? Yeah, come on. And also kind of business partnership, so they asked to make deal to buy this website, not proper buy the website, but to have an exchange of data and so on.
So what we can see here in the gallery, or in front of the gallery, is actually some kind of internal data you possess, but
yeah,
it's not
now
online.
Now the dating website is offline, basically. It's protected by a password, there is no one can access publicly. In this gallery there is a kind of little peep show, you know, so that you can look a little bit through, but you can't really interact. I disabled the link to Facebook, I disabled some function, but you can still see some of it. Mm-hmm. And the website of the project is still online, face to Facebook, even if they ask to shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to ask you about this project also. Probably peer-to-peer credit cards,
yeah.
Gift finance. So in this case, you mentioned that you were turned down by the museum in Bristol.
I was not turned down. I mean, they actually sponsored me. I mean, it was quite good collaboration. But they were really afraid. Actually, the reason, I want to say everything, if you push mm-hmm. this point, the reason why they were worried and they wouldn't be mentioned as sponsor, actually, I don't know if you can really write about that, you may should... confusing, I mean, not confusing, but say it's sponsored by a museum, not saying the name of the museum.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that they had the cut, you know, the public fund cut, because of this recession.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really afraid to lose even more funds from another step from another system, that is the system that provides funds to the museum, because you should consider the museum is not on the top. There is someone on the top of the museum. So they were afraid to lose also this cut, so they wouldn't have this kind of big provocation in these days. That was the reason. Was not a kind of censorship, we wouldn't call it censorship, it was just because of the context, of course. In this case, yeah, I mean.
The project was then presented as a street art action, actually. You were handling
well, somehow, street art, yeah, it could be, I mean, it's really overlaying different area, but yeah, it was an action because then the credit card is actually a proper object, and I would call it a proper bill, proper money, and it trigger an image in our brain, really huge. So when you see a proper credit card in your hands in the street, you want to pick up, you are tempted to hold it. And so that is why the action was also kind of the beginning of a process that continue online, because then to activate this credit card you have to go online, and so it's mixing the public sphere and the online sphere somehow, and then online you can issue other credit cards and become viral as well. So yeah.